Welcome to this week's edition of World Crisis Radio. This is Webster Tarpley reporting from Washington, D.C. And we are now at the beginning of the season of the primary elections here in the United States. It keeps going for many months. I think it goes all the way to California in the late spring. We'll check the dates. But right now it's Monday, the Iowa caucuses, and the following Tuesday, and it was not the day after that, but a week after that Tuesday, we then get the New Hampshire primary. So please take a look at Tarpley.net, and I think it's going to be up also at the Tax Wall Street Party. But here's Tarpley.net, Thursday, January 28th, yesterday. Right now it's Friday, January 29th. Tax Wall Street Party calls on Iowa and New Hampshire to stop the fascist Trump at all costs. And we suggest the Democrats are going to have to hold their noses and vote for Bernie Sanders to prevent Hillary from picking up all the marbles, taking her dollies, and going home and essentially aborting and silencing the democratic process. So again, if you're in Iowa, you've got to stop Trump. When you go into those caucuses, perhaps more on the Democratic side than the Republican side, you've got to find ways to maneuver so that you essentially prevent the greatest evil from coming out of it. The greatest evil would be a Trump victory, because that would tend to shut down the entire process. If Trump wins in Iowa, he's going to go on and win in New Hampshire and then in South Carolina, and the opposition will be reeling. It's much better for the Republicans to have a prolonged process. It's better for the Republicans. They might be able to get themselves away from the fascism of Trump and the holy roller clerical fascism of somebody like Cruz. But remember, at this point, Cruz is decidedly the lesser evil. He is the weaker fascist power. And again, it's like World War II. If you're dealing with Japan on the one side and Germany on the other, you don't let yourself get carried away by your hatreds and your resentments. That would have been Japan first. That would have been suicidal. That would have been World War II going on for another 5 years and millions of more dead on all sides, including this one. So you didn't do that. You did Germany first, Japan later. Right now it's Trump first and others, including Cruz, later. But in the meantime, you've also got this wonderful possibility of playing Cruz and his legions against Trump. Remember, the only way the world has survived to the current point is that evil very often does good in spite of itself. When evil fights evil, the good has often benefited. And I repeat my conviction that without this effect discussed by Leibniz and others, the world would not have survived to the present point. So let's give Cruz and his followers the chance to do something good in spite of themselves. Some people might call that divine providence. Okay. Others, the Hegelians, might call that the cunning of reason, die List, die Vernunft, the world spirit, right? Using people for various purposes and then casting them aside. So anyway, call it whatever you want. I would simply call it this fact that when evil fights evil, the good can benefit. So that would be Iowa and New Hampshire, hopefully, on the Republican side. Remember, if Trump takes it on the chin in Iowa, after all of his clowning and boasting and posturing and farnetications and histrionics, then that may cut his totals down. The big mo, as George Bush put it, George H.W. Bush in 1980, right? When he came, George Bush, of course, won the Iowa caucus, came into New Hampshire with the big mo. Unfortunately for him, he didn't win. Then it was Reagan in 1980, but not George Bush. In this case, the idea would be maybe Cruz can also, or somebody else, right? Some Kasich. It doesn't, Cruz is, simply, an expedient for Iowa. but it could be Bush, it could be Christie, it could be Kasich, could be Rubio, could be any number, knocking the Donald out of first place. And once you get the Donald going over to defeat and the bitterness of defeat, what will his standard stump speech become? Usually it's reading the polls and telling everybody how great he is and how he's going to win everything, that he's invulnerable and invincible. Well, a few defeats are going to take the bloom off that rose. So that's what we have to do on that side. Stop Trump at all costs. Again, might be Cruz in Iowa, might be any of these other characters in the state of New Hampshire. Keep it open. Keep the fight going. And on the other hand, if you're a Democrat, it's pretty clear Hillary Clinton, an odious warmonger and Wall Street puppet, certainly much worse now than she was in 2008, and that's going some. You've got to make sure that she does not preemptively abort the entire primary process and essentially send everybody home and prevent the clarification of issues. So the idea is, hold your nose and vote for Bernie Sanders. Bernie Sanders is a, what can we say? He has two sides. One is that he does manage to mention, to enumerate, to catalog many of the great issues of our time. It's when you get to the program, the countermeasures, the implementation, this is where the Emperor Bernie is practically nude. So this is no good. Remember now, we want to go towards the Democratic convention as an open convention, not a brokered convention, because that means controlled by a smoke-filled room, but an open convention, a contested convention. We want to see 25, 30 ballots. Tremendous interest would be generated at that point. It hasn't happened in many a moon. I mean, going back to, I think, the 1940s or 30s for different parties, it's not something that has happened lately. The conventions have turned into these banal, arid, Philistine infomercials, not interesting. Nobody watches. But if you had the real stuff of conflict, and remember, the delegates that are going to be chosen starting on Monday, or that process gets into motion, the delegates actually will be chosen in New Hampshire. Remember, those delegates are pledged to vote for one candidate on the first ballot, according to the traditional rules, and I think they're still in force. And that means that once the first ballot is over, then they're free. They can vote for whoever they want. And that can include somebody else coming into the race, a dark horse, somebody else's stalking horse. So let's roll the dice. Let's stir the pot. Let's keep it going. Let's prevent Hillary from shutting everybody up. Don't let Hillary cut off debate. She's fixing to cut off debate. Don't let her do it. Keep it going. And Bernie Sanders at that point becomes the vehicle. And partly evil, to be sure. I mean, certainly what Bernie Sanders says about his love for the Saudi monarchy, the Qatar monarchy, the Emirates monarchy, the Jordanian monarchy. There was, of course, this guy, Friedrich Ebert, in 1919 in Germany. He was a social democrat, a right-wing social democrat, just like Bernie, who was a guy who tried to keep the Emperor William II in power, right? Kaiser Wilhelm II was his only hope of holding on to power was this guy, Friedrich Ebert. But then it was too far gone even for that. So hold your nose and vote for Bernie Sanders. Partly evil, partly mediocre, doesn't matter. Use him as a vehicle. We'll be back in a minute. Welcome back to A World Crisis Radio. It's the 29th of January, a Friday. It's the Friday before the Monday of the Iowa caucuses and 8 days after that, the New Hampshire primary. So we are in the thick of the political season. And our party line from the Tax Wall Street Party, if you want to know what to do, we'll tell you to try to maximize the good and minimize the evil. Accentuate the positive, eliminate the negative, latch on to the affirmative, and don't mess with the cheap substitutes, and that is stop the fascist Trump at all costs. Vote against him in the Iowa caucus or caucus against him, and then same thing in New Hampshire. Don't let fascism pass. Remember, the imperative is cut it in the bud, nip it in the bud. Don't allow this to become so strong that it can't be stopped. And of course, given the way these primaries work, that could happen very, very fast. So don't let it happen. On the Democratic side, stop Hillary from cutting off the debate. Stop Hillary from turning off democracy, representative government in favor of her Wall Street friends. So hold your nose and vote for Bernie Sanders. He names some issues. He solves none of them. His cowardice is one of the main problems with him vis-a-vis the presidency, right? Bernie, this past week, when there was a bid from the Manchester Union leader to have an unauthorized, unsanctioned debate for the New Hampshire primary, which, of course, Debbie Wasserman Schultz, the creature of Hillary at the Democratic National Committee, she had tried to rig the schedule to protect Hillary from being exposed, being attacked in debates. Well, Hillary, she hasn't had many attacks from Bernie. He's essentially pulled his punches the whole time. I think that's a scandal, right? He's posturing with the lives and fortunes of other people, right? Looking good for the independents, those fussy independents. And he's doing that essentially, risking the fortunes and the well-being of others, right? Very, very hypocritical, way to posture. But still, there he is. His name is on the ballot. You can vote for him. So hold your nose and let's go with Bernie this time. Not because we think he's qualified for the presidency. He's not qualified for the presidency. Not because we think he's a leader or courageous. He's none of those. He's no leader and he's a coward. But still, there's a name on the ballot. You might as well hold your nose and vote for Bernie. If, however, you are so horrified by Bernie, and I can see that there, some people might be, suppose you feel strongly about, for example, capital punishment. You want to put a stop to that? Well, O'Malley has done that in Maryland. He has enacted the DREAM Act for the children of undocumented immigrants. And he has also enacted the equal protection of the law guaranteed to everybody by the 14th Amendment, but finally a reality in Maryland as marriage equality, right? Equal protection of the law. So you can perfectly respectable vote to vote for O'Malley. And indeed, it's good to keep O'Malley in the running because that allows him to accumulate some delegates. And that might be a way to build up the necessary mass of delegates to stop Hillary or make her drop out at an earlier stage than otherwise. Now, we have said again and again, don't look at the individuals as individuals. Don't look at the individuals qua individuals. We look at these individuals, the candidates, as mediating these larger changes. For example, if Trump wins everything, then that's fascism. If Bernie keeps going, well, that might then mean that other people will come into the race, right? After Eugene McCarthy defeated or came close to defeating LBJ in New Hampshire in 1968, Robert Kennedy came into the race. So the quality of the candidates might improve, right? There are some people who might come in. Right? It's going to be a wild, improvised thing. Here's now the point. The split of the Republican Party is there for all to see. This is the goal, the extinction of the Republican Party as this center of bigotry and warmongering and racism and union busting and anti-government insanity in Washington. We want this Republican Party to go away, go into the garbage can of history, go with God, but go away, Republicans. Now, last night, that was the Thursday, the 28th, we had two competing Republican debates, in effect, right? We had the official Republican National Committee Fox News debate. And there we had seven. We had one fascist, Cruz, and the rest more traditional reactionaries, right? All kinds of different reactionaries. But then on the other side of town, we had the top fascist, the fascistone, Trump, with clerical fascist Santorum, or would-be clerical fascist, since he doesn't seem to have a movement, and Huckabee, right, a.k.a. Hucksterbee. So we had Santorum, really Diabolorum, not of the saints, but of the devils. And then we had Hucksterbee, or Huckabee, the Elmer Gantry from Arkansas, although somewhat more good-natured maybe than the original Elmer Gantry. But that's exactly where you have to watch out, right? These are people who use a folksy affability as a way to slip the fix in before you know what has hit you. So if nothing will show you that the Republican Party is breaking into pieces, if you can't see the split in the Republican Party after that, I don't know what I can do. This has been a month, the month of January 2016, where we had at the State of the Union, Governor Haley, the designated Republican hitter, hitting Trump. We have the conflict of the donors and the base going on behind the scenes, right? We have David Frum writing all about this, right? The disgruntled dissident neocon. We have Trump against Fox News. This is fascinating. So what we've got is a split. Eine Spaltung. Spaltung, or una scissione, a split, una scission, a split, and my personal favorite, rascol, the split, and the Republicans are all joining this or that faction of Raskolniki, and of course, remember, Raskolnikov of the Dostoevsky's famous novel. So this is a split. I'm trying to tell you every way I can. The potential for the Republican Party to be smashed into pieces and swept away is there. Mobilize to realize this potential. Take this now. Don't let this drift by. And to go into action. Join us. Join the Tax Wall Street Party. We'll help you know what to do. Welcome back to World Crisis Radio. This is Professor Joffe reporting from Washington, D.C. So, the guidelines. Stop the fascist Trump in Iowa and New Hampshire. Hold your nose and vote for Bernie or O'Malley if you want to prevent Hillary from shutting down democracy and cutting off debate and essentially telling you to sit down and shut up. Oh, was that somebody on the other side? Anyway, is oligarchical politicians, right, these stooges of Wall Street, they all end up sounding quite similar. And then what we saw last night, it's a split in the Republican Party. It's gaping. It's wide. It's asking for it. So let's do something to make this irreversible. Now, the secret of all this is very, very interesting. I'm so amazed, right, that the soap opera method of thinking has taken over the United States. I have an essay on the American ideology from about, 20 years ago in Richmond, Virginia. And one of the problems with the U.S. ideology is it's so based on gossip. The pus of gossip is everywhere, and it actually cripples people's minds. Now, let's look at it. Here we have Megyn Kelly. Now, she, to a lot of these characters, Megyn Kelly is simply another soap opera heroine. And she's out to get what she wants. And she's scheming and she's taking over. And she's decided that she's a feminist and she wants to stick it to Trump. Now, the problem with this is that feud between Trump and Megyn Kelly, it would seem to me, is the product of a much higher level rift, which I'm going to point out to you now, the rift at the top level. We have to also see that in the debate, which then occurred yesterday, Megyn Kelly, after having, you know, been the target of Trump. Nevertheless, not only did she go on the stage, but acting with supreme self-confidence and self-assuredness and impudence, she then turned around and started attacking Cruz and Rubio, to the point where Cruz, and she was joined in this, of course, by the others, by Mike Wallace's son and by the other character, Brett Baer, I guess it is. They all went after Cruz and Rubio because those were the two leading people who came to that debate, right? That one of the two debates. Now, if we have Fox News anchors attacking Trump and Rubio and Cruz, what does this mean? It means that there's the policy of the network. Now, at one level, you might say, okay, it means that Roger Ailes is feuding with Trump and some other Republicans. And this has been this pattern, right? You remember the Fox, the earlier Fox debate, the first one, and we've had some other events on Fox News Channel. But it's always viewed then as a feud in terms of this personal gossip-oriented nonsense. Now, what I think is fairly obvious is Rupert Murdoch is the person. Roger Ailes is a running dog for Rupert Murdoch. Roger Ailes is a stooge for Rupert Murdoch, the Australian, British, foreign, reactionary Rupert Murdoch, who has his own point of view. Now, what is it? Couldn't it be clearer? Could it be clearer that Rupert Murdoch has decided to support Hillary Clinton? Isn't that the obvious conclusion from all of this? Megyn Kelly and Wallace, they do not make up their own party line. Those people are mercenaries. They are on the payroll of Fox. And how could she do this? She's attacking everybody. She can't do that without Rupert Murdoch having her back, I guess, as we say in the current degraded jargon of neologisms. Let's go and see what's going on here. Here we have an article appearing on the Fox News Politics website, Fox News Politics subdivision, and the date on this is April 11th, 2014. It's not so long ago, less than a year ago. And here we have Howard Kurtz. Remember him? He used to work for CNN as a liberal. Now he became a reactionary and went to work for Fox News. Well, he's a mercenary too, of course. These people are utterly unprincipled. Headline, Rupert Murdoch, Hillary Clinton, and the politics of 2016. Again, a year ago. Sorry, almost 2 years ago. What am I saying? 2 years ago. So, here's what he writes. Rupert Murdoch, Hillary Clinton, and the politics of 2016 by Howard Kurtz. Some people may be surprised by an interview in which Rupert Murdoch declares, quote, I could live with Hillary as president. Close quote. Let's have that again. I could live with Hillary as president, says Rupert Murdoch. And then he says, he goes on to explain, we have to live with who we get. I think we should say in English, we have to live with whom we get. We don't have any choice. It would depend on the Republican candidate totally. Well, maybe Rupert Murdoch, a cynical, conniving weasel that he is thinking, this Republican Party is breaking into pieces. I'm not going to sink any good money into this clown show, the clown car, the loony bin express with these Republicans. We have to live with whom we get. We don't have any choice. Now, this is an interview with Fortune Magazine, and that's the original source. Let me give you the original source on this. Probably easier to get it on CNN or on the Fox News website, but I think Fortune is going to want you to pay something to read this, but you get the idea. The Rupert Murdoch interview where he says, I could live with Hillary Clinton as president. Therefore, you don't have to be an investigative journalist to figure that that is what's going on. So Now we've got another split. Now we've got the Fox News empire under the orders of Rupert Murdoch, certainly on the big stuff, I would say, in spite of everything, excuse me, that has happened. So he's telling us that he could live with Hillary Clinton as the president of the United States, says Rupert Murdoch, okay? So I would say there's another big nail driven into the GOP coffin. In other words, he says, these people are crazy. I can't get my patronage. I can't get my pork barrel legislation. I can't get what I want through the Congress with a lunatic like Cruz paralyzing everything, shutting down the U.S. government. Right? These people are accustomed to think in terms of power, not endless chaos and sabotage and obstructionism, as we see in the case of Cruz. And of course, with Murdoch, he may well have a personal feud with Donald Trump, right? Who's abrasive in his public life as well as in his private life. So I think that's what you've got going on. Now, this defines a complete zoo, really, in the primary season. The Republican Party can very easily go the way of Federalists in the second half of the sort of the 1815 to 1820 time frame, when the Federalists simply cease to exist, and then at era feelings. Welcome back to World Crisis Radio. Webster Topley here in Washington, D.C., the 29th of January, the Friday before the Monday of the Iowa caucus. So, no matter how you say it, eine Spaltung, la scissione, la scission, rascol, no matter how you say it in some of the main languages that I know anyway, it means the Republican Party is splitting apart. Let us please drive some wedges in there to help it along, to make it irreversible. Look at the potential to move the entire political axis of the United States back to something looking more like normal, ditching this lunatic ideology, right? This supply side, monetarist, Friedmanite, Austrian, libertarian, toxic brew that they've been dishing up, anti-government, sovereign individual, and it goes all the way to the extreme right. Let's get rid of that. Let's dump it. Let's have something, let's get back to some kind of eudaimonic legitimation, right, where you have to deliver something. You can't run on a platform of saying, I'm going to strip everybody of their economic rights, their social safety net, their job, their home, their medical insurance, the college education. We've now got Republicans have been successful in disorienting many people when they say a college education is not worth it. A college education is too expensive, says William Bennett, right? Ex-drug czar for stupid Reagan on his morning blab show. And he's convinced a lot of people. There are people now in the middle class who are so demoralized and so disoriented that they're beginning to give up on their birthright. Under the New Deal with Franklin D. Roosevelt, after 100 years of labor struggles, we got to a point where, with the GI Bill in particular, you could go to college. It's one of the hallmarks of the middle class. Own a home. No, said the Republicans. Rent. And go to college. No, say the Republicans and the austerity Dems. You gotta have a purely vocational degree. You're gonna go be, an apprentice. I'm sorry, that's not good enough. That is not good enough. In the world of globalization in the 21st century, you must, repeat, must have a 4-year college. B.A., A.B., call it what you want. B.S., and so on down the line. In engineering, in all sorts of things, whatever you want. It can be quite vocational, quite productive, quite real-world oriented. But don't give up on that fundamental point. You have the right and the responsibility to go to college, because how are you going to compete with China, Japan, and Europe, and all these other economic powers, whatever they are at this point, unless you have that ace in the hole advantage of a highly educated workforce that can learn things. And it's beyond vocational. You want to have democracy. You want to have elections. You want to have representative government. You want to make that constitution work. You've got to have a highly educated population. I guess they didn't write that in because they didn't realize that it could fall so much into desuetude. But remember things like the Homestead Act, well, the Northwest Ordinance even, under the Articles of Confederation, set aside part of the land to pay for free, universal, compulsory, public education. That was Horace Mann. That was many others. And then, of course, under the Homestead Act, same thing. Land, public land was set aside to sell that and finance college education through the land grant colleges, right? Cornell is a very well-known one of them, but there are lots and lots of others, right? It's dozens and dozens of places. So we have to stand up for civilization, education. The European middle class has been fighting for education for 1,000 years, and I, for one, am not going to quit. I will not surrender on that point. People have to go to college, and Wall Street has to pay. And there it is in a nutshell. So we've got Rupert Murdoch apparently dumping the Republicans. You can see this in the hostility of Fox News and Megyn Kelly to these Republican hacks on the seven-person stage. And then across town you have Trump, maudlin sentimentality, of course, from every pore. Everything amazing. Right? The guy has like a 10-word vocabulary, and great and amazing go along with a, the, that, this, and a few others, and is. So that's the lineup. Obviously, we can't really get into the polls except to say that I think there was one of them quite recently that had Trump at 29% and Cruz at 27%. Now, first, it's remarkable, right, that you know, there's about half that don't want either of them. Some people think that Rubio might come up in some unexpected way. But the main thing there is that you can look for Trump to underperform his polls. If it says 29, then think 25 or something like that. And you can look for Cruz with his fanatical followers regimented by Strategic Communications Laboratories of London, the famous golpisti of the British Raj, then you're going to see that Cruz will probably overperform the polling. So there's a very definite possibility. So again, I appeal to people, if you're a Republican in Iowa or you know anybody who is, tell them not to vote for Trump. Vote for anybody else. And if you really want to be essentially, if you want to take courage, look at this character, Cruz, realizing that you're not voting to give him any power. You're simply voting to use him as a means of shutting down Trump in Iowa. And again, one defeat is going to have a stunning effect on the braggadocio of Trump. Now, concerning the Iowa caucus, I've written about this a number of times. I wrote the original account that I give of the Iowa caucus goes back to 1980 when it was Bush against Reagan, and George H.W. Bush came out of it with the big Mo. And then, of course, I actually participated in the Iowa caucus organizing in 1988, at which time Governor Branstad was already in power. He's still there. Quite a feat after almost 30 years. So I would also call attention to an article. I think we may put this out in the briefing just to refresh everybody's memory. Concerning the battle of the vote fraud machines, because it's not like there's one vote fraud machine anymore. There are multiple vote fraud machine. So this is my article from, let's see, it's February 1st, 2008. So just, you know, 8 years ago. And it's called Coup and Counter Coup in New Hampshire. The Brzezinski Clan Color Revolution versus Diebold or Diebold Vote Fraud. And the idea here is that what you had in 2008, right, after Obama had won the Iowa caucus with Edwards coming in second and Hillary third, it then moved to New Hampshire where she staged that crying jag. And at that point, there were two competing operations, right? There was the Color Revolution or CIA People Power Coup with the groovy, cyber-savvy youth coming in, bringing home all of the techniques that had been used in Serbia, Georgia, Ukraine, and the rest of them. And then we had the other faction, the Clinton faction, an intelligence faction, was able to win the day by a more traditional type of voting machine pattern fraud in favor of Mrs. Clinton. Now, I'm talking about this because I want Bernie to open his eyes and watch the things that I read about in this article. Back in a minute. Welcome to the second hour of World Crisis Radio. Webster Tarpley here in Washington, D.C., coming at you once again with the lowdown on what's actually happening from the point of view of the American opposition. Yeah, the American opposition, not the anti-American one, but the American one. And, of course, remember, if you're running down the country horse, you're walking on the fighting side of me. Just bear that in mind. And that goes for you libertarians out there, and you Republican, and you Howard Zinn and Noam Chomsky people. That's all a completely bankrupt opposition. So we, as I said, we want to accentuate the positive. Now, let me just take a minute for some kind of housekeeping and organizational stuff. First thing I'd like to mention is go to tarpley.net right now. I'm sure it's up there because I see it. Dax Wall Street Party. This is our statement for the Iowa caucus and indeed the New Hampshire primary. Tax Wall Street Party calls on Iowa and New Hampshire to stop fascist Trump at all costs. Democrats should hold their noses and vote for Bernie Sanders to keep primaries and convention open, open, democratic, free, not shut down by Hillary Clinton, the odious, complacent Haridan, and so forth, right? So that's a statement by me. It's about a 30-minute tape from our wonderful new headquarters of the Tax Wall Street Party. Great. Our production value is getting better and better. There's some very talented people working on this, whom I thank. So there we have that. When you go to tarpley.net, obviously, right next to this, call, the 30-minute tape, you got to get a copy of this book, Just Too Weird, Bishop Romney and the Mormon Takeover of America, Polygamy, Theocracy, and Subversion. Because this thing of Bundy, the Bundy gang in Oregon, these people are an expression of what we read about and this question of Mormonism, and I'll get some detail about that. But this book, Just Too Weird, I'm sorry, it's prophetic, if I do say so myself. Just Too Weird has turned out to be prophetic in terms of the internal destabilization of the United States done by Mormons, quite possibly polygamous Mormons. And that takes us back to Cloven Bundy in the spring of 2014, old Cloven, and now his two Scions, and that would be Amon and Ryan and their gang, who have been in the news now lately with this lunatic armed gang takeover of federal property, which was tolerated for far too many weeks, but now seems to be coming to an end. So I would like you to buy yourself a copy of Just Too Weird, Bishop Romney and the Mormon takeover of America with polygamy, theocracy, and subversion. Maybe there was polygamy going on in that federal bird sanctuary, right? The Malheur bird sanctuary. Well, those guys are the Malheur of the country. So that's another point. Now, a couple of things. There is a newspaper in Rome. It's up there with Corriere della Sera and La Repubblica of Rome, and it's called Il Fatto Quotidiano, FATTOQUOTIDIANO, Il Fatto Quotidiano. It means the daily fact, the daily deed, something like this. And on last Sunday, there was a wonderful interview with yours truly done by one of the leading writers in Italy on matters of the recent history of destabilizations. She's an expert on the Moro assassination, the various Italian investigations into it. And she's focusing right now on the early 90s as a time where the Cold War institutions, with the end of the Cold War, were organized to maintain this absurd subjugation of Italy under the Atlantic Alliance, Britain and the U.S. in particular. So that's Stefania Limiti, and she is, again, one of the leading writers in Italy. It's an honor to be interviewed by such an accomplished and actually famous and highly respected person. So this is Il Fatto Quotidiano, and what am I telling the Italians? I'm telling them that Trump is a fascist, okay? And, you know, this is taking it right to the source, because remember, fascism was invented by the Italian imperialist finance bourgeoisie between 1920 and 1922, or 1919 and 1922, and then they refined it. So taking it right back, the Italian press had been trying to essentially laugh off Trump. Oh, he's a buffoon. Oh, he'll never be president. I'm sorry. You may notice that one of the most dishonest strains of Anglo-American historical writing is that Mussolini was some kind of clown, buffoon. Well, again, about a million people died because Mussolini did what he did, right? Getting Italy into World War II and all sorts of other things. So that's not very funny, is it? This is the kind of thing that you would expect with Trump. Don't tell me that Trump wants good relations with Russia. I don't believe it. That whole Republican Party apparatus is pulling him in the other direction. And since he's utterly unprincipled, that's no guarantee of anything. So take a look at Il Fatto Quotidiano of last Sunday. And finally, there is a new TV network going on in Europe. It's centered in Italy, and the person that has done most to put this into action is Giulietto Chiesa. Giulietto Chiesa had been the correspondent of L'Unità, the Italian Communist Party newspaper. He had been the correspondent for them in Moscow. But then, after a while, he became the Moscow correspondent of La Stampa of Turin. La Stampa generally associated with the Fiat interests, but at the same time, you know, it's one of those conservative newspapers which is very well informed, and Giulietto Chiesa was a part of that. So he's now one of the leading people at Pandora TV. So this week I did a 10-minute overview of the primary situation, the split in the Republican Party, the fascism of Trump, the clerical fascism of Cruz, the reactionaries, right, the CIA Bush faction, and all sorts of others, right, Christie as the Garden State Göring. So that's going to be available on Pandora TV, and that's broadcast in a number of places. In other words, that has a certain reach, not only in Italy, but in other European countries, and I'll be telling you more about that. So again, go to Tarpley.net, read my, listen to my 30-minute statement for the party on the eve of the Iowa caucuses in New Hampshire primary. Make sure you buy just too weird while you're there. If you can read Italian, I'm sorry about this, but, or you can do machine translation if you want to. That's easy, right? Alibaba or things like that. That would be Il Fatto Quotidiano. Go to their website, put in Tarpley. Probably find me pretty quick. And then Pandora TV. The same thing, right? Pandora. And of course, the idea is that even though Pandora did release all the problems, right? The one that, that remained was hope. So we continue to be hopeful and optimistic in the great tradition of Leibniz and others. So let's go back to New Hampshire for a second here. Take a look at Tarpley.net. Another thing to do while you're there. Coup and counter coup in New Hampshire. Brzezinski clan color revolution versus Diebold, Diebold vote fraud. We'll talk about that in just a minute. World Crisis Radio. Welcome back to World Crisis Radio, Webster Tarpley here in Washington, D.C. Let's look now at this tragic event in Oregon. The Bundy Gang, the land grabbers, essentially it's a form of proto-fascist militia at the very least. We have got to have a policy in the United States of zero tolerance for armed gangs. If you show up with guns and you announce a political program, then that has got to be nipped in the bud. Do it as humanely as possible. But this cannot be allowed to go on. We cannot have law-abiding citizens being stopped on public roads, U.S. highways or state highways, by gun-toting, camouflage-wearing, libertarian-spouting, sovereign citizens, lunatics. Some of these people need therapeutic confinement, but some of them are obviously mentally ill. So, as I've said, the problem with the FBI is you can say, well, with Ruby Ridge and the events back in that time frame, right, the Waco and so forth, you could say that the FBI was essentially out for blood. They were looking for victims, right? They seemed to want to generate as many victims as they could. This time it's the reverse. Notice that the FBI has handled this group with kid gloves. They have been the coddled, spoiled lapdogs of the federal law enforcement apparatus. Now, remember, one of the fundamental things about this group that you haven't been told is that most of them are Mormons. The leaders are Mormons. This is not exactly Latter-day Saints LDS, but it's FLDS, the fundamentalist Latter-day Saints, certainly are playing a role. And that would be the Warren Jeffs group. What's the influence? Was it Cloven Bundy back in Nevada who ordered this event? Or was it Warren Jeffs from his jail cell, right, where he's serving a long term for molesting young girls, right? Outrageous crimes against humanity as well as against these poor little girls. I am wondering why the FBI has not arrested the kingpin of the operation. Maybe that's Cloven Bundy on his ranch back in Nevada. And we had that entire absurd circus with these gun-toting lunatics pointing loaded weapons at federal officers and getting away with it. No charges, not even a misdemeanor. Well, that was obviously done to stimulate a repeat performance. Those guys out there are Mormon or under Mormon leadership or penetrated by Mormons, their group is anyway, and there is inside the FBI something called the Mormon Mafia. The Mormon Mafia. You can read about that in Just Too Weird, Bishop Romney and the Mormon Takeover of America with Polygamy, Theocracy, and Subversion. That is available at Tarpley.net. If you don't know this, you don't know anything. Now, naturally, we deplore the death of this man, Vinicum. This is unfortunate, but I'm sorry. We've seen the film. He's trying to escape federal officers, and he starts reaching inside of his coat to pull out a pistol or whatever it was. Anybody in the black ghetto, any Hispanic, anybody living in a poor neighborhood of a major city could say that is simply behavior, which is going to get yourself killed. So you can't do that stuff. Stop posturing. Get rid of this idiotic point of view. Again, we want to know who the kingpins are. Right now it looks like 10 or 11 are in jail, one dead, and four are still holding out at the Malheur bird sanctuary. So the point with fascism is nip it in the bud. We have the statements, I read them last week, from Hitler and Goebbels saying, if the opponents, and that means the Social Democrats and the unions, not just the police, if they had known how weak the Nazis were at the beginning, they could have beaten them up, crushed them, and that would have been that. There would have been no Nazism. So think. You've got to think, when you get an armed gang like this one, where will they gravitate? Where are they going to go? Well, I'll tell you a little bit where they're going to go. Michael Savage is perhaps more than any other of these radio-retarded reactionary ranters on the Trump campaign. Reactionary. Here's the problem. Michael Savage is not even reactionary. He's several steps beyond that. He's gone into the stormtrooper of the mind terrain. And, of course, these guys, these other guys, are not in the mind. So Savage has inveighed against the attack on, or the attack, the attempt to round up these armed gangsters trying to essentially privatize at gunpoint U.S. public land, the property of all the American people that these guys want to have given to them. Savage is in favor of them. He gives them moral support, and he also says that he's going to, he boasted that he might create a legal defense fund for them. Well, I haven't seen that, but it could, it's conceivable. So you can see where it's going to go. Here's Savage speaking for the Trump campaign, right? Has Trump on there all the while. By the way, Savage is where you find the speeches by Trump, right? The tapes. You can see it all at the Savage website. So he comes out and says, this is an outrage. Those dirty feds have attacked these wonderful freedom fighters. We're having the libertarians tell us that that was a peaceful civil disobedience. I'm sorry. The rifle, the pistol, and God knows what else are incompatible with peaceful protest. They're incompatible with nonviolence and with civil disobedience. They don't mix. It's like oil and water. They are incompatible. This is ridiculous. This is doublethink. This is Orwellian contradictory speech. So let's just go back. As soon as this happened, I put out the question of the land titles was always the big issue in Utah, because the Mormons said, we have our titles from God, right? We have it in the Book of Mormon and all this. And the federal government had to say, no, I'm sorry. This is now the United States of America. So your land titles on loan from God will not be good enough. And then that became the Mormons harassing everything. Here I have the proclamation of U.S. President James Buchanan. This is not a good guy. This is a doughface, right? A northern politician with southern secessionist slavocrat principles. April 6, 1858, he talks about the Mormon territory as a strange system of terrorism. 1858, back in a minute. We'll come back to World Crisis Radio. So, the first time any American president used the term terrorism in a public statement is President James Buchanan, and this is a proclamation dated April 6, 1858, in response to the secession of Utah Territory under the Mormon demagogue Brigham Young. This is the first secessionist attempt in American history. So before we had the traitor clan around Jefferson Davis and Robert Toombs and the rest of these characters, the slavocrats, we had the same thing coming from the Mormons. And what Buchanan, again, Buchanan is a very weak entry, but he's, you can imagine the enormity of what's going on. He has to respond to it and say something. So Buchanan writes, such is believed to be the condition to which a strange system of terrorism has brought the inhabitants of that region, Utah, that no one among them could express an opinion favorable to this government or even propose to obey its laws without exposing his life and property to peril. So nothing has changed. All this stuff they're spouting has got nothing to do with any recent event. This is the ideology, and it's obviously connected to the oath of vengeance that the United States government did not embrace the dictatorship of Joseph Smith, and therefore every Mormon had to pledge to exact revenge against the United States. I'm not making this up. Get the book. It's called Just Too Weird, Bishop Romney and the Mormon Takeover of America with Polygamy, Theocracy, and Subversion. And you get that at Tarpley.net. So Buchanan goes on. After carefully considering the state of affairs and maturely weighing the obligation I was under to see the laws faithfully executed, what the president has to do, hey, Obama, and not after 3 weeks, but fast, it seemed to me to be right and proper that I should make use of the military force at my disposal, as might be necessary, to protect the federal officers in going into the territory of Utah and performing their duties after arriving there. Okay? So, what, 158 years ago? Same thing called Mormonism. It's a kind of anarchoid, right-wing, anarcho-fascist rebellion. And we've got, you know, the neo-Confederates are inclining that way. Now, here's the other thing. The law under which the 10 people who are now in jail, including Ammon Bundy, this Ammon is there and his other associates. Now, they're being held under House Resolution 45, which was then enacted into law. It starts off in this form. It becomes was then passed into law in the Senate. So H.R. 45, it becomes a crime to destroy the United States government or property and to impede the execution of any U.S. law or to take that property by force. So I urge you, look at the Oregonian, right? It's called Oregon Live. It's the Portland, Oregonian website that has been a source of reliable, or at least often reliable information, rather than the manic raving of people who feel that they have a dog in this particular fight. So they're violating this law. Now, how did the law emerge? Well, in the early months of the Civil War, right after Lincoln was inaugurated, remember, for Lincoln to get through Baltimore was at peril of life and limb. And he had to do it with the help of the Pinkertons, and he had to go around, not go into the station, not make any public statements, but just essentially go through there in the dead of night to frustrate the gangs that would have tried to assassinate him. So Baltimore in 1861. Now, Baltimore in 1861 was the home of a group called the Blood Tubs. Blood Tubs, like a bathtub. But not a bathtub, a blood tub. And this was a gang of secessionists, criminals, gutter snipes, recent immigrants who had fallen into the lumpen proletariat. And at a certain point, you therefore had the connecting railroad, right? The railroad from Philadelphia to Baltimore to Washington, D.C., and you had this volcano of secessionist thugs trying to interfere with that, trying to blow up the bridges, trying to cut Washington off so it could fall into the hands of the secessionists and the slavocrats, right? The bane of our existence here in the United States, right? So it's actually true. The Bundys are secessionists, right? They say the laws of the United States don't apply to us. So it's some scheme of secessionism. Now, we have this situation going on. It was thanks to some Massachusetts volunteers and then some New York volunteers that came through that the blood tubs were pushed back into their holes and under their rocks so that the supply and strengthening of Washington could go on. And we have this, I want to recommend to people, one of my favorite Civil War songs is the New York Volunteers, or sometimes known as the Yankee Volunteers. So Civil War music, New York Volunteers. It's on YouTube. And play this now. Maybe we'll set it up for next week. But the music is interesting, and it's a rousing march. So the words go like this. The rebels out in Maryland, they madly raved and swore they'd let none of our Union troops pass through to Baltimore. But the Massachusetts regiments, no traitors did they fear, but fought their way to Washington like Yankee volunteers. Okay? So those were the Massachusetts regiments, the Yankee volunteers, who kept Maryland in the Union, prevented the cutting of the railroad, and generally frustrated the treasonous pro-slavery designs of the Confederacy. And remember, the Confederate way of thinking in many places had to go through a series of steps, right? We had nullification back in the 1830s. And so forth, the nullification ordinance of South Carolina, cradle of secessionism. Then you have interposition, where the state says, no, you can't enforce these laws to the federal government. Of course, slavery, the background of all of it. And then anarchy, right? Secessionism. So this is the dark side of American history. So those are the issues. Now, Savage is in favor. I've heard perhaps unconfirmed accounts that Hannity is also making sympathetic noises about these people. This cannot be allowed. Now, let me just get back to this New Hampshire question, what Bernie is. Bernie says that he doesn't trust Microsoft, right, to do the counting in the Iowa caucus. Good. Here, in my article, and this actually goes back to my Bush book of 1992, this is a quote from the Manchester Union leader of New Hampshire, William Loeb III, I think he was, reactionary owner of the Manchester Union leader, but very often right on with the intelligence. The quote is, the Bush operation in Iowa had all the smell of a CIA covert operation, said William Loeb. He was a curmudgeon. I think on this one he was right. Now, that Bush operation in Iowa, with all the smell of the CIA covert operation, we may find that in action this coming Monday. I mean, those networks might be getting rusty, but they might still be there. So all you other candidates, watch out. Back in a minute on World Crisis Radio. Welcome back to World Crisis Radio, Webster Tarpley in Washington, D.C. So once again, in 2008, it was Obama coming in with the swarming youth, right? The idealists, the aspirational people mobilized on the internet by fake bloggers, fake chat rooms, and all the rest of it. And then the older machine pals, right? That would be the Shaheen faction of the Democratic Party there. And the unions, and again, a traditional apparatus for, let's say, managing the outcome of the election. We also had this guy, Mark Penn, on the Hillary side, who seemed to be getting a lot of money for very little, and whose loyalties may have gone in the wrong direction. So in the midst of this media swoon for Obama, right, this unprecedented attempt to stampede everybody. We still had the Clinton machine, Democratic Party bureaucracy, trade union allies, the Shaheen group in the Democratic Party, and on and on. So remember, what you're seeing, these elections actually are the clash of the various vote fraud machines. And remember, it's vote fraud. It's not voter fraud. Voters don't do it. It's done by people like Karl Rove, right, in the Redshift of 2004, and his attempt You'll remember last time around, Karl Rove was absolutely convinced that he had the votes because he had, you know, he'd bought them fair and square. So there we go. Now let's we got little time left. We got to talk about Flint, Flint, Michigan. This exposes the Republican Party once again. My God, is there another argument that the Republican Party has no right to exist? This guy Snyder, this guy, he should be arrested. He should be indicted and arrested. That's fine. But Michael Moore, of course, in his posturing doesn't go any further than that. But the problem is, first of all, this emergency manager law has to go. You'll remember that that law was wiped out by a referendum, and then Snyder turned around and reinstituted the law in a slightly different phraseology, but the same law. That is the Little Hitler law. The emergency managers from Flint to Detroit to Benton Harbor, all of these places, the Little Hitler law gives the emergency manager all power. That's why there's no government in Flint that could have taken responsibility for it. So Bush the Younger had Katrina. Right now, the Republicans competing for the presidency have Snyder and Flint. These are good reasons not to let them go to Washington and try to do this again. For infrastructure, Bernie Sanders has a program of $1 trillion on budget, taxpayer money, or money that would otherwise be in the public treasury, wherever it's coming from. He thinks that with $1 trillion, he can get 13 million infrastructure jobs. Well, it's good to hear a number, finally, after all this time, and we've been baiting him and goading him to do it. But that's a lousy $67,000 per job. Is that going to be wages and benefits only? Is there going, above all, to be any capital investment per job? Remember, leaf raking requires a rake. That's the capital investment of $10 or whatever it is. But with Bernie, we're not even told that. How much of that is wage and benefit, and how much of that is capital investment? Will there be any capital investment? Or you don't want to even say capital because you're so afraid with your right-wing social democracy would then collapse, right? Your right-wing Cold War red-baiting social democracy from the Young People's Socialist League. Man, the Young People's Socialist League was not class struggle. It was essentially a kind of upper class cafe clutch. The Tax Wall Street Party wants $5 trillion to create 30 million new jobs. Now, that's a much better ratio. That gets you up to almost $170,000 per job, meaning you have some money for wages, for benefits, and for some kind of capital investment, which we would like to increase, of course. And the $5 trillion does not come from the tax coffers. It doesn't come out of the pocket of Mr. and Mrs. America. It doesn't come from borrowing from the Chinese. It is taken by the Federal Reserve. The Federal Reserve has to pay. And Bernie Sanders, of course, one of the great indices of his impotence is that he has said nothing about making the Federal Reserve do anything. So they get a complete free ride. Stupid Yellen. Now, Stupid Yellen is now harvesting the whirlwind. About a month ago, we said if the zero interest rate policy is gone, if the QE, quantitative easing 1, 2, 3 are gone, and if the stimulus, of course, is long gone, then you're going to go into a period of breakdown. And we've got the Chinese in big trouble. The stupidity of President Xi, whose main goal in life was to make sure there be no stimulus, and Prime Minister Li. We've just had the Japanese go negative. The Bank of Japan is now in negative interest rate territory. I would say, if nothing else is done, the U.S. Fed will have to go negative quite soon because Stupid Yellen allowed herself with her crazy beliefs, right, her hubris or whatever it is. She was convinced to take away the zero interest rate policy. So you can look for that to get worse fast. We just want to mention getting more out of this article, this famous Sam Francis article. Sam Francis was the guy who wrote for the Washington Times here in the early 90s, and he was an advisor to the Pat Buchanan campaign. of 1996 and others in the 1990s. You have to see what these people believe. And some very influential people were volunteers for Buchanan, and you look at what it is. Somehow the idea of Sam Francis is that racism is simply eternal. It's like a force of nature. Racism, have you ever with you? No, wrong, because that can be pacified. The racism you see today is to a large degree generated by the Philadelphia plan of the 1970s. In other words, the successful attempt, to pit white workers against black unemployed and Hispanic unemployed in the building trades unions, and then extend that through all of the U.S. economy and other. The race-based affirmative action has generated these byproducts, and the guess here is that that's what the Ford Foundation wanted when they did it. That's why it was enacted in the way that it was. You can take a look at Surviving the Cataclysm and see everything about that, because I go through that in quite a bit of detail. Remember that the 20th Century Foundation, the old 20th Century Fund, is arguing that you can do a better job for the black community with an income-only, colorblind approach to this. You'll actually get more help going to the people who need it rather than doing it by race, where some very, very rich people are allowed to cash in. So racism is not eternal. Racism has increased because of foundation-funded and counterinsurgency strategies designed to do just that. The other thing is, people like Sam Francis, they have no idea of economics, no idea of economic growth. They can't imagine how a program like ours, the Tax Wall Street Party program, could create an economic recovery. Because if you create 30 million new jobs with that infrastructure program and 10 million new entry-level youth and, entering the workforce jobs, 40 million new jobs in this economy would bring us to something like full employment for the first time since 1945. And I can tell you that when human life is rising in price, when labor power is being bid for, when you're in demand, this creates a kind of optimism which is otherwise impossible to imagine. I've seen it in Italy 64, Germany 67, and Taiwan 88. Economic boom. So that's what we need, and that's what we're going to go for. So remember, stop Trump at all costs. And hold your nose and vote for Bernie Sanders, and we'll see you next week, God willing.